Wait, I thought it was to pull.
To pull.
Like Poland. To pull like Poland.
Is it? Are we sure?
Oh,
no. Oh, no, Clayton. No, what have I done?
I am 99% sure, but I can go here and check the beautiful person who messaged us.
Yeah.
Because I thought they were like, why do you say Paul?
I thought they were like, why do you say Paul?
Wait. Do you pronounce it like to pull and not like to Paul? Yes.
To Paul.
To Paul is right.
So it's like polyamory.
It is like polyamory.
In the way,
like
in the way that she is in a relationship with everybody on the ship.
Yes.
To Paul. We should start doing that as a warm up before the episode. So then when we start talking about it, we don't get it wrong.
Yeah.
In our like invented mass psychosis, just the two of us where we can't pronounce it.
Yep.
Anyway, should I start the show?
Go for it.
Okay. I hope that stays in. Welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek : Enterprise. I am Maddie, Lubchansky.
I'm T'Pol. I'm Clayton, actually. Sorry.
That's all right. I forgive you. I'm T'Pol. This week, it's episode 21 of season 1, Detained. In the week of April 24th, 2002, but also inclusive of 10th and 17th. Because Clayton, as the science officer for this episode, which means I'll be talking about what was going on in America. The last episode aired on April 3rd. So there's most of April 2002 has happened.
What were they doing? I thought we were thinking it was maybe b-ball.
That was the last time there was a break. There was March Madness. I don't know what the fuck this break was for. I could not figure it out. There's nothing like in like news events of April that told me why. Other shows were not airing reruns.
Also,
possible they had a mid-season break so they can write more episodes and film them because they were producing them as they aired, is my understanding.
I mean, a thing that's news about Star Trek, I guess, is that the last episode was the ratings low point for the season. Oasis.
Yeah, so they sent Mr. UPN down to the studios, and he said, get me plots about Guantanamo Bay right now. Anyways, let's talk about the news first, shall we?
Why not?
So April 7th, 2002... Clayton, you'll be so glad to hear about this, but our long national nightmare is over.
Oh, finally.
Which is to say, of course, geometric group theory and low dimensional topology specialist Martin Dunwoody and mathematics professor has finally solved the Poincaré conjecture.
No way!
Do you remember where you were in 2002 when you heard that mathematics professor and low-dimensional topology specialist Martin Dunwoody had solved the Poincaré conjecture? Do you remember where you were when you heard about this?
Yeah, I was at Dairy Queen on 17th Street.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting some Texas toast.
Yeah.
I remember exactly what I was doing when...
Yeah, I was in school and they wheeled the big TV. And then when I got... we had a half day. And when I got home, it was the first time I saw my dad cry. it's some mathematics theorem about the hypersphere. I was reading about it, and I'm just going to give you the Wikipedia the first. In the mathematical field of geometric topology, the Poincaré conjecture is a theorem about the characterization of the three sphere, which is the hypersphere that bounds the unit ball in four-dimensional space. I will say, to be fair,
uh-huh.
this conjecture was first conjectured in 1904, and they solved it in 2002, which is cool. We're spending too much time on my stupid joke, and moving on.
No, it's fair. It's fair. It's fair. But it's like a Star Trek thing is we rag on them sometimes for the gobbledygook made up sci-fi joke.
That was some gobbledygook.
That you would scientists, mathematicians, low form topology geometricists, or whatever.
Yeah, I was trying to. So, like, I have a pretty good understanding of math. Mm-hmm. I have an engineering degree. To get the engineering degree, I had to do most of a math degree. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot of math things, and I'm like, maybe I could get to the bottom of what the fuck this is. And I start reading, and I get to a diagram where they've got like a torus with like a line drawn on it, and the caption is just, neither of the two colored loops on this torus could be continuously tightened to a point. A torus is not homeomorphic to a sphere. So stop saying that. It is. Clayton.
I'm sorry. You know how I get about toroids.
Yeah. sound the temporal culture war bummer alarm. April 11th, 2002 was the, I don't know if you remember, the Griba synagogue bombing, which was an Al-Qaeda. They bombed a synagogue in Tunisia in 2002. They killed, I think, 20 people. It was a suicide bombing. Not good. But Al-Qaeda stuff happening all over the Middle East at the time. Big old thumbs down to Al-Qaeda bombing a synagogue.
Big thumbs down.
Yeah. On the same day, the International Criminal Court finally got enough votes ratified to be established by the UN.
Huh.
And a thing that does its job and works and is great.
Why did I think that was around for a lot longer?
Well, they'd been trying to get it going since the 1960s, but I think after 9/11, things really kicked into gear. A very stupid thing that happened April 12th to 14th, 2002, was, I don't know if you recall, Venezuela's very stupid 48-hour coup by the business community.
Yeah, where did I see that? I was reminded of this.
Might have been a coup somewhere else.
Yeah.
But they're happening all the time. But there was, this was, Hugo Chavez was deposed for 48 hours.
Yeah.
The U.S. and the CIA deny involvement in this coup, Clayton. Would you believe it? However, really? The guy that like was the orchestrator of the coup was the leader of like Venezuela's Chamber of Commerce. And the American government, the country in which you and I both live, recognized the new president within hours. tough to say whether or not the U.S. liked it or not. Anyways, within 2 days, Chavez was back in power. It's just a really stupid exercise in like the long tail of like Operation Condor kind of stuff.
Yeah, still trying into the new millennium.
Yep. I for some reason I had thought this coup was earlier, but it was 2002. April 21, echoes of history alert,
oh,
siren.
No.
Jean-Marie Le Pen, the father of Marie Le Pen, he makes it to, shocks everyone, and makes it to the second round of French presidential election voting. He ends up losing in a landslide to Jacques Chirac, who was the incumbent. But it makes this weird, huge impression on French society. There's this big tremor of like, oh no, the very far right is not a joke.
Mm-hmm.
It is no longer a joke. It is a big, it is still referred to in French politics today as a sort of very important moment. And it's just sort of like, it's like seeing like the shadow of a villain very early in a movie.
Yeah.
European fascism, it's back.
And it's not like I think it would be perfect here, but there is something a little enviable about France's method of being like, you kind of get another shot before you have the actual election of like, they do a sort of jungle primary. And so that's how the far right got into the actual election for president or whatever.
Yeah.
But it won't happen again or anything. So,
no, I don't think so. So the day before the episode we are talking about today aired, Pope John Paul II convened most of the cardinals to Rome to talk about the thing.
Oh.
That's right. John Carpenter's seminal horror masterpiece, The Thing. No, to talk about the child molestation stuff, which, as we all remember, came out like right before 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them until April to get everyone to Rome to be like, hey, should we have been doing that for the last 30 years or no? Yes, no. Thumbs up. Just let's get the temperature of the room, guys.
Well, you know how much longer travel takes. They got to do all those checks and TSA and.
Yeah, no, these guys gotta walk. They gotta get their shepherd's crooks, which they've lost, and they gotta find them, and they gotta walk the whole way. And it's hard to walk in the robes, wearing all the vestments and stuff. Two other things that happened this month that are sort of like, oh, the 90s are over, which is both Lane Staley and Lisa Left Eye Lopez have died.
Rest in peace.
Lane Staley from Alice in Chains, Lisa Left Eye from TLC. That was April 5th and April 25th. I've read that was the same month, and that's very like, oh yeah, both that era of grunge and that era of sort of R&B are coming to a close. And speaking of which, let's talk about music, because yes. So there's 3 weeks of music to talk about. I'm just going to go talk about what was notable new in the first 2 weeks, and we'll talk about the chart for the week that we are talking about. So in the chart on the 13th, we've got new Sheryl Crow's Soak Up the Sun, baby.
Oh,
I want to tell everyone about how good that song is. It's fine.
It's great.
It's a good song. It's pretty good.
Sheryl Crow? That was on the radio in the Ashley's car because it was vaguely country.
Yeah. I was like, who's Ashley? Because I'm stupid. If you had not confused me early in the episode by saying your name was Polyamory. I wouldn't have been so confused by you changing your name here. I don't think people should change their names. I think you should have a lot of leeway to get it right. Oh, forever, maybe. Anyways, so also new that week, Ja Rule featuring Charlie Chuck Baltimore's Down Ass Chick, which is a song that I listened to this morning when I was pulling this together, and I experienced a Proustian. I was like, I don't know if I remember that song. And I listened to it and I was like, I went into the Proust zone, like, oh, here we are, baby. I am 16 years old.
Yanked back in time.
Like, truly
by Jean-Rou.
Jerked out of my own soul. On the chart for 420, Blaze It, Clayton.
Oh.
We've got Brian McKnight featuring Jermaine Dupri's Tell Me What It's Gonna Be. What's It Gonna Be? Tell Me What's It Gonna Be? Tell Me What's It Gonna Be by Brian McKnight. It's, slow jammy.
Okay, I was trying to, is that 420 related or it just happens to you?
No, it just happened. I see those numbers and I gotta say it.
Yeah, the number.
Also new that week, very important to me, of course, is No Doubt's Hella Good.
Oh, wow. Yeah, wait, we had another No Doubt already, right?
Yeah, but this is like the new No Doubt.
This is
post-Tragic Kingdom.
Like, right. Okay.
We are so Gwen forward. Like the moneyed interests have spoken and it's Gwen o'clock for America. Hella Good is the one where they're on jet skis, if I recall correctly.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So,
let's talk about the week in question. So new this week is I'm Gonna Be All Right by Jennifer Lopez featuring Nas, which you might remember as the one that samples I Got Five on It.
Yep.
Which that, of course, is a sample of Michael Jackson's Why You Treat Me So Bad, which is fun to me to think about. Also new this week, a thing I'd completely forgotten about, which is the band B2K.
Oh.
Or as you might remember them, Boys of the New Millennium.
What a flash in the pan.
Yeah, I mean, they were around for 6 years, 98-2004. Apparently they reformed in 2018, which I'm not 2018 to 2019, and they've reformed again this year. Good for them.
2026 reunion tour. Good for them.
Yeah, good for them. But if you remember, of course, that's Omarion, the boy band he was in.
Uh-huh.
With three gentlemen named Lil Fizz, J Boog, and Raz B, who I don't remember any of them. I remember Omarion, of course, because he went on and had, I think, more of a solo career.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like the main boy, I believe. But they're one of their first, bigger hits, of course. They've got two on the charts. They've also got at number 39, and Gots to Be comes in new this week at 73. So the rest of this chart, nothing too exciting, all old stuff, which is why I try to get the new stuff. Foolish by Ashanti, number one. What's Love, Fat Joe featuring Ashanti at number two. Ain't It Funny, J-Lo and Ja Rule, number three. Usher's You Don't Have to Call at number 4, and Girlfriend by NSYNC at number 5. So nothing crazy.
Yeah, that feels pretty stuck in amber since the last one.
Yeah, I mean, it's all like, you know, the Billboard chart has like the arrows. Mm-hmm. The arrows on numbers 1 through 5 are all sideways, which means no change. Can't Get You Out of My Head has dropped out of the top 10. R.I.P. to Can't Get You Out of My Head, as has Leanne Rimes' Can't Fight the Moonlight. Scrolling through here, nothing too interesting coming down the pike besides the things we mentioned. Anywho, so that's Muzak, which is how I pronounce the word music. Talking about the television, just running through the 3 weeks that we missed, Enterprise's repeats getting smashed by of course, you know, the usual suspects, your Eds, your 60 Minutes Twoses, your My Wives and Kids, your Georges Lopez, etc. The repeat of Dear Doctor on the 10th got very close to defeating our old nemesis Dawson Creek with a new episode.
Oh, well.
Okay. Which is interesting to me. And then on the 17th, again, got very with a repeat of Sleeping Dogs. Almost got Mr. Dawson sleeping.
Those are two I actually remember from early. So there's got to be a floor here of just, I guess, diehard Trekkies who will literally watch any Trek that is currently airing.
Yeah, it's 2.3 or so is the rating that'll get there.
Ouch.
However, I would say this week, Clayton. Great news.
What do we do?
We've beaten the vile Dawson.
Well,
with a 3 rating and a 5 share, defeated Dawson Creek. Dawson and his vile creek.
Yeah, vile.
which, like, so, you know, with a 2.8 or 2.6 and a 4 share, which, like, to give you an idea of what a good rating is, they're getting demolished. Both of them, 7.9 rating by Survivor. No 60 Minutes 2 this week.
Oh.
It is instead a special about the 3rd season of Survivor called Look Closer, the first 24 days. Just like not even an episode of Survivor.
What did you say, like, season it was?
I want to say it's the 3rd season.
I thought Survivor was going since like the 80s. Am I thinking of something else?
You are thinking extremely of something else. The first season of Survivor was 2001. They're in their like 40th season. That's because they do 2 a year.
Because they do 2 a year. Okay.
They do 2 a year. And you assume they do 1 a year, like a normal show.
I guess
no,
so.
Jeff Probst does not sleep. He's behind you. Right.
They are on.
Yeah. Anyways, Ed, etc. Survivor, 80s show, Grounded for Life. They're all there. Still getting beaten by that 80s show, which is depressing and kind of tracks with how good the episode was this week. Okay.
Yeah, it has taught me a little bit about the Nielsen ratings, and this show, I think it like we mentioned, it bottomed out in the last episode. I think it was a 3. Like, that's for a new episode, their worst.
Yeah. That's where we were this week as well.
Yes, this matched it.
So we're in a bit of a skid.
A little of a low point.
Yeah, so I'll say the week of the box office, the week of the 11th, which is the 2 weeks ago, new this week, very notable to me in my 9/11 movie-going memory, is the film, number 8, the film Big Trouble. You ever see that bad boy?
No, I was hoping you were going to say Big Trouble in Little China, but that's definitely
not. No, sir, that's from the 80s.
That's from the 80s.
Or the 90s. Anyways, the film Big Trouble, which I saw in movie theaters, and I guess I was one of 7 people in America that did this, which is a Disney movie, but it is a Tim Allen, Dave Barry novel adaptation.
Oh, my goodness.
But the whole plot, it was supposed to come out in September, like September 21st, 2001. And the plot of it is they are smuggling a nuclear bomb aboard a plane.
Oh.
So it got very pushed.
Oh.
And then they basically, and the thing was like, there was like crazy advertising for it. And then after they pushed it, they basically stopped advertising and kind of dumped it in April, which, as you'll find out, is a extreme dumping ground.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I,
Well, Tim Allen, he was the star, and it was kind of one of his attempts to get into more quote unquote serious movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's a comedy. It's like a farce.
A farce.
It's a farcical film.
Black.
It's comedy. Not good. I saw it in theaters. I think I guess we missed. I don't know. I can't remember if we missed talking about it or not. But of course, in theaters right now, hanging tight, hanging tough. And number 20 is mother, future mayoral mother, Mariners, Monsoon Wedding.
No, we didn't.
Yeah. Anyways, if you could, before I have watched that movie a lot of times, it's so fucking good. It's the hottest movie ever made. Mm-hmm. It's crazy bones. All right. Number 5 that week, Van Wilder premieres. Remember Van Wilder?
Right.
National Lampoon's Van Wilder.
It's just, I know these.
A movie that sucks and is bad.
They release, like, I know they existed in this era. I'm still a little surprised. Like, oh yeah, that's when it happened specifically.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds and Cal Penn, Tara Reid. Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude. anyways. Oh, here's, do you want Maddie's Story Corner?
I love Maddie's Story Corner.
Because at number 2 premiere, no, so number 1 is Panic Room. Number 2 this week, this is the week of the 11th, number 2 is a film called High Crimes.
Okay.
Starring Ashley Judd and Morgan Freeman. It's like a legal thriller.
Ooh.
The movie is fine. It's got a crazy cast. It's got a young Jim Caviezel. Mm. It's got Amanda Peet. It's got Adam Scott.
Adam Scott.
This was based on a book by a novelist called Joseph Finder, who... He lived in Boston when I was in college, and there's like the job board at school that was like, here's like, you know, basically Craigslist, but for like dipshit jobs for dipshits, on a bulletin board in the student union that was like,
yeah,
someone needs help moving, or, you know, someone needs like some help doing something, like here's where you go sell your blood, like that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And I sold a lot of blood. Mm. But one of them was this guy needed help moving, and me and 3 friends went, and it was the author Joseph Finder, and there were posters for the film High Crimes everywhere. And he was like, you know, he's like airport sort of like legal thriller novelist. Yeah. And he's like, well, we're just moving across the street, and we're like, oh, that's great. He lived on Newberry Street in Boston. Sorry to blow up his spot if he still lives there. I mean, this is 20 years ago.
Now we doxed him though.
I doxed him that he lives in Boston. So he was like, I'm just moving across the street. We're like, great, that's easy. And he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he takes us into the room we are moving the stuff. And it is his insanely huge library, including like 50 boxes of huge books.
Ooh.
And then floor-to-ceiling bookcases that we had to carry down a spiral staircase, across a busy street, and then up another spiral staircase across the street. And we were so, and he was not paying us very much. And at the end of the day, we were so fucking mad at this guy. And then he gave us all like one slice of pizza for our trouble. And I was like, I'm going, one day, Joseph Finder, I will have my revenge on you. And I guess I just did it by doxing you on my podcast. So, anyways, that's my Joseph Finder story about the film High Crimes.
2 slices and a beer minimum. That's
God damn. Yeah. I mean, I got paid like $50 for like hours of backbreaking labor.
Incredible.
Hey, Joseph Finder, if you're listening, and I know you are, I'm mad at you.
Well, I was gonna say this sounds like the kind of document thriller I might be into, but I'll in solidarity, I will not give him any residuals.
It's it's a candidate for a watch for you and me as a sort of like representative, you know, mass culture kind of object.
Mm-hmm.
The week of the 18th, new this week, is a bunch of horseshit I never heard of. Like a movie, just a movie about Caravaggio called Caravaggio, I guess.
All right.
Sure, whatever. But at number 3, do you remember the film The Sweetest Thing with Cameron Diaz and Christina Applegate and Selma Blair?
It sounds so familiar.
Yeah.
But no.
It's like, it's just a rom-com. I remember the poster, and it's Cameron Diaz, and she's holding a big book in front of her nude body.
Well, on Wikipedia, she's still got pants on, or a dress.
She's got dressed on? Okay. Well, but maybe I misremembered it.
Isn't it a song? Or what's the sweetest? Why is that like?
When there's a song like, whoa, whoa, the sweetest thing. I mean, I imagine it's the, you know, thinking about that song. Also new this week is the Bill Paxton starring and directed film Frailty, which is like a guy doing like The Binding of Isaac, which is cool. a movie that, you know, it's Bill Paxton and Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
Lost to Time, this one. But Bill Paxton directed a movie. It's called Frailty. Why don't you go see it right now? And then number one, new this week, is the film Changing Lanes. It's a Sam Jackson joint. It's Sam Jackson, Ben Affleck. A movie I don't remember existing at all.
Yeah, another one of these major actors, no idea.
No idea. And it's like, the film follows a successful young Wall Street lawyer, who's obviously Affleck, who accidentally crashes a car into a vehicle driven by a middle-aged recovering alcoholic insurance salesman. That's Sam Jackson. After the lawyer leaves the scene of the accident, the two men try to get back at each other, engaging in a variety of immoral and illegal actions that end up having a major impact on each man's life.
Damn. Okay.
Wait, this sounds good?
Yeah.
They should have called this movie Crash Out. This sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, it sounds great. I'm looking at like Frailty. It was like in the film festival circuit in 2001, but didn't even get released until now.
Oh, that's probably not good then.
But yeah,
the director directed Notting Hill, a movie that I don't like. That's enough out of him, I guess. And then of course, okay, now we're on to the week in question because I'm going long on culture. Sorry, there's a lot of it.
It's okay.
It's okay. Sorry. I'm just gonna cover two this week. New and number three is the film Murder by Numbers.
Ooh.
Which is the Sandy Bullock. It's got a young Ryan Gosling.
I can't believe all these actors were acting around this time.
I know. But it's, you know, it's like a what is it? It's like a psychological thriller. But it's based on the Leopold and Loeb case.
I was gonna say, so it's which, not the Zodiac, which I associate with.
It's Leopold and Loeb. And for my money, I would just watch the film Rope instead if you're going to do a Leopold and Loeb movie, the Hitchcock movie that is incredible and perfect. Great. That's the Hitchcock that is all one shot.
Right. Oh, my God. Yeah.
And it fucking rips. And anyways, at number one, a film that needs no introduction, The Scorpion King. Do you have a relationship to The Scorpion King?
I wish I did, because this was another one where I think it was considered too mature for me to see as a young lad. Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
I saw this bad boy in theaters. Yeah, it's a prequel to the. It's like the prequel to The Mummy.
Yeah.
How many films would you say are in the Scorpion King film series?
No, wait,
Clayton. How many books? How many films?
I'm closing the Wikipedia. I haven't seen anything, but now
How many films do you think? Because here's the thing: it's a prequel to The Mummy, and it launched the Scorpion King film series. Because
you're not counting The Mummy in that, even though it's a prequel.
I am not. Movies. How many Scorpion King movies do you think there are?
Four.
Five, with an untitled reboot in the works.
Oh, okay. Damn.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Scorpion King. Scorpion King 2, Rise of a Warrior. Scorpion King 3, Battle for Redemption. Scorpion King 4, Quest for Power. It's not called number five. It's just called The Scorpion King. Book of Souls.
Book of Souls.
That came out in 2018.
No, it didn't.
That had direct-to-video. It represents the culmination of the original series and a sequel to Scorpion King 4, Quest for Power. That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, listen, it's...
How many series launched in 2002? I guess we got Ice Age and Scorpion King.
So, yeah, now I'm really down bad. I'm looking at the filmography of the guy who directed the Scorpion King 5, and I just want to read to you his incredible filmography.
Go for it.
Well, a selected filmography. Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. He directed the film Who's Your Caddy, if you recall that.
Yeah.
And then let's all go through Jarhead 2, Field of Fire, Tremors 5, Bloodlines, Kindergarten Cop 2, Tremors A Cold Day in Hell, Death Race Beyond Anarchy, Scorpion King 5, Jarhead Law of Return, Bulletproof 2, Tremors Shrieker Island. This guy is the master of this shit.
Of the, like, not gonna be good sequel to a franchise you didn't realize had sequels.
Don Michael Paul.
So wait. Jarhead, like the Iraq War movie?
There's like a whole... Oh, do you not know about this?
No.
There's a whole Jarhead, like, sequels thing.
What?
Yeah, dude. Like, how many Jarhead movies are there? I have to find.
What a tangent. Okay.
I have to, like, we're deep into it now, but hold on. How many Jarhead movies are there? There's three. Jarhead, okay. Jarhead 2, Field of Fire,
this
Jarhead
guy made 3, two of them.
The Siege. And then, of course, Jarhead 4, Law of Return.
What's that?
Four Jarheads.
What's that Gulf of War movie with like four or three really good actors and they're like trying to find gold that they left?
The film is called Three Kings by David O. Russell?
I literally looked for Four Kings. I got it off by one king.
Now that's the unmade sequel by this guy, I'm sure.
But that's an Iraq War movie I would have liked to see some series of, because I thought...
Yeah, I mean, that one is like, I don't know, my memory of it is that it's fun. I mean, fuck David O. Russell forever.
Yeah.
Who bragged in the press about molesting his trans niece.
Good Lord.
And of course his other like fucking onset shenanigans, like big fuck to him. I think his movies also, most of them suck. I have a weird soft spot for I Heart Huckabees.
Oh,
that's
wow.
The end of culture.
The end of culture.
That's the end of culture. We've gone 32 minutes on just what happened because it was all of April 2002.
Yeah, we got to.
But that's
up.
Fine by me because this episode sucks and there's not much to say about it. I mean, there's stuff to say about it, but not about what happened in the episode.
Yeah, time to go to the episode.
Woo! Woo!
So, we're here on episode 21 of Star Trek Enterprise, and we're on Detained. And I'm going to say, I kind of enjoyed watching this one.
You enjoyed this one?
In the sense that, compared to some of the other ones where I was bored out of my mind,
mm-hmm.
this one I had forgotten almost completely.
Yeah, I forgot about this one too. It wasn't boring. I will say it was not a boring episode.
Yeah, but the main thing about it is, Maddie, did this episode have a message, you think?
Oh, I think the message is, I think that it's Guantanamo Bay is bad, I think.
Something along the lines of, don't stereotype an entire peoples based on what some of them do. It's like,
yeah, I mean, I will say the message of the episode kind of is Guantanamo Bay is.
is well, how did that happen?
Yes, 2002, that bad boy opened. But, you know, that sort of, I don't think it was about exactly Guantanamo Bay specifically.
Because we'll get to it, but Archer specifically, multiple
brings up the internment camp for Japanese Americans in World War II. But, I mean, I looked this up. Guantanamo Bay has been built at this point.
Okay.
But also, I mean, that was in January. This is April. Like, I don't know how fast the schedule was for writing, but... This kind of stuff was in the air for sure.
That's the thing. It felt like the most they are responding to what's going on. And I'll say this. It also felt in a sense like classic Star Trek in that, like, they had messages. I mean,
of course,
beating you over the head with it in this one. But there's something about this one compared to some of the past boring episodes where, like, why is this Star Trek? what is this?
Yeah.
But
no,
okay.
This one is very like, it felt old Trek.
Yeah.
Like, this could have been if Trek was on, like, Vietnam War era.
Right.
This could have been a Vietnam War era Star Trek.
And also, they don't refer to anything politically happening in America since the 1960s, so...
Yeah, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I guess had Guantanamo been really humming along, they would have mentioned it. Or probably not, if not because at the time it had some, you know, probably... pulled massively well, and
yeah,
because America is I'm looking at my sorry, I wrote down this America is bad. It says here, bad.
Yeah,
it's a bad country. It's soaked in blood, has always been bad, will always be bad as it's currently constituted. Yeah, that's what it says in my notes here. America bad.
Glad we got that in the notes.
Yeah, I got it in my notes. Soaked in blood, it says.
Soaked in blood.
It's drenched in human suffering. That's I don't know who wrote that. It wasn't me. The episode message is very like, and also, you know, it gets at something like, oh, if you detain people for no reason and like torture them and like separate them from their family and like treat them miserably, you're going to create more radicals. In fact,
yeah, it's kind of self-fulfilling prophecy.
It does raise that point, which is pretty good. The episode is not capital B bad or boring, which are the cardinal sins of this
of television show.
Man. But yeah, just not much happens in it.
We get what I think is good for Star Trek Enterprise. This starts in media res.
Yeah, baby. Cold open.
Archer and Travis. They are somewhere. They don't know why or where they are, but Travis is the first one to wake up. He actually gets to do a lot in this episode. I wish it was more interesting, but
yeah,
I'm glad he doesn't just disappear.
He makes it through the whole episode.
He does. He says a lot for his character. He notices by like leaving this room, which they're not like imprisoned in this room. He can just leave. He notices there's a lot of Suliban in this place.
Yeah.
And he gets back to Archer, wakes him up, and you kind of start piecing out a bit. They were in a shuttlecraft that got attacked. They don't even know who attacked them. We get the, you know, intro music.
It's been a long time.
Sure has. So now Archer's woken up, and they both leave. And the first, like, Suliban they run into is just like, the new arrivals. So he doesn't care about them, and they, you know, they're expecting... Yeah. Just familiarize people who aren't following the show. The Suliban are the main enemy in the Temporal Cold War.
Temporal Cold War. We saw them last in the episode where one of them got onto the ship disguised as like a pilgrim.
That was Silic, right?
It was Silic, and he tried to sabotage the ship. And then before that, we saw them in the pilot episode. So Broken Bow.
Our most consistent like long season arc, I guess.
What was clearly supposed to be the big bad of the show.
Yes.
Before that fateful Tuesday morning.
So they kind of do some things here. You know, they're a little surprised the Suliban just walking around, and they are too. And then they like a prison guard comes up to them and is like, you need to talk to the colonel wants to talk to you.
Yeah.
And they're led to Colonel Gratt, a.k.a. Dean Stockwell.
Dean Stockwell. Fucking Quantum Leap reunion, baby.
Yep. And specifically, I saw this in the wiki that Bakula had been wanting this to reunite with his old Quantum Leap buddy.
Honestly, their scenes together are good.
Yeah.
Those boys got the juice with each other.
They're
juiced up.
And especially because they're very much, this is not how they are in that show. They are.
No, they're buddies on the show.
Yeah.
They're friends. It's his only holographic friend.
And he also, on that show, Dean Stockwell uses like a little computer called a pad. And so they're making a reference to it when Colonel Gratt has like a little handheld computer, I guess. I don't know. I didn't watch Quantum Leap, so.
I watched it when it was on and not since, which was a long time ago. So I don't remember much of it, but I was just like, hey, it's Dean Stockwell, who, you know.
That's nice.
In the laziest alien design I've ever seen in any Star Trek, maybe?
Yeah, there's actually a little bit of a point to it that they're supposed to look very much like humans in this, but yeah,
is
whatever.
Is that the point? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Is they just have little bumpies.
You know, like a little ridge thing above their
Yeah, but it's
nose.
Like... It kind of looks like, you know, like there's that thing you can get for when you swim that like pinches your nose shut.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looks like they got that, but it's flesh colored and they push it up to the bridge of their nose. And that's all they got going on.
Apparently Stockwell also said like when he guest appeared on the show, he did not want to do like full makeup. So
that was my first thought was Stockwell probably too dignified.
Yeah.
To wear the Suliban makeup.
Totally fair. My thing was when I saw him, he has a semi-regular part in like the latter seasons of Battlestar Galactica.
Oh yeah, that must have been before I made it through the first seasons of that show before I tried to leap out a window and then I started watching it.
Yes, for where I understand, you would never have gotten to him. But he's actually really good in that. And he's one of my favorite characters.
He's a good actor, I think.
Because he is anywhere he is, basically. But his character in that is a lot closer to this one. So he was running on the same kind of themes as that one in a way. So anyway, we get a lot of filled in story plot, what's happening here, which is that they accidentally encroached on a secret military base of the Tandarans, blew up their shuttle. They're lucky they didn't just get completely... plastered. But Colonel Gratt is sorry for the innocent mix-up. He understands that they were just exploring, just curious about some energy readings, and in about 3 days they'll get to see a magistrate who will let them go. No worries, but you cannot talk to the Enterprise. That's just policy.
That's right. You shouldn't do it. some sort of let's call it a directive.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I guess they're Tandarin's prime.
Yeah,
director or something. And then as Archer gets back into the like population of prisoners here, he discovers that the Suliban aren't all bad.
They aren't all in the cabal.
They're not all in the cabal. They're not all genetically modified.
Yeah.
And so this is where maybe it's
one of them's got like a kid.
Yeah, he's also got a kid. And I was like, oh damn, they put a kid in this whole makeup. I feel bad for him.
Oh no, that's, I don't like that. I don't want to think about that.
This is where I was like, oh, are they, and this is just because we watched the West Wing episode.
Mm-hmm.
Are they trying to do a thing here where it's like genetically modified is like terrorist extremist to the overall Suliban population?
Yes, I think that's it. Is like they are basically Suliban fundamentalist nationalists.
But not all Suliban are bad. You can't
not all
stereotype.
Suliban are in the cabal. You can't stereotype aliens. This is a Star Trek show making that point for the first time ever, I bet.
Yeah. Racism, bad.
Racism. I'm looking at my notes again. Yep, it's under my list of stuff that is bad.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing is Enterprise. We finally hear from them. T'Pol and Trip find out from Colonel Gratt. And he gives them the whole thing, the whole spiel about like, sorry, I cannot let you talk to them. It's just policy. We get a little joke about Vulcan lawyers. Trip's like, oh, geez.
Yeah.
Gonna get a Vulcan lawyer. And T'Pol thinks everything's gonna be A-okay, so don't worry about it. So Archer, back in the...
She's like, there's no way they'll be convicted and put in jail for 30 years.
No worries. Archer meets Danik in the commissary after initially, you know, kind of having an off-putting interaction with Suliban because he was being racist. Now he's like, oh, you might be like a person who I can treat normal. And Danik is definitely just a guy, just a Suliban. He's played by Dennis Christopher, who was the only other actor in this episode that had a Wikipedia entry.
He looks familiar to me.
Yeah, he does some fairly good acting here for being in full makeup where you can't do many facial expressions. So I'll give him props for that. But he's kind of like he's never a main actor, but he's been in him quite a bit. Yeah, like he was in...
It looks like he's in a lot of genre movies, which is...
Django Unchained.
Yeah.
He's in Chariots of Fire. So he does a fine job here.
Sorry, I see he's in a film called Alien Predator. Which is not Alien versus Predator.
Oh.
It's a film from 1985 called Alien Predator, which is so funny to me.
That's great. we learn from Danik that the Cabal attacks led Tandaren's military to just start rounding up all the local Suliban, as they said, relocating them. But, you know, I think he does a pretty good job here. He's conveying the whole, you know, I was literally born in the same town as some of the guards here. Kelv, that guard Kelv, I was born in the same town. We get some information. Most Suliban are nomadic, but some assimilate into other cultures.
Oh, they're just immigrants.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Mm. And then his friend comes in, Sajin, and this is where he comes in, and I'm sorry, his head shape. I was just like, he kind of looks like a lemon.
Yeah, I was sort of in this episode made, because a lot of the other Suliban stuff, they're in the darker and they're in the shadows.
Yeah.
They're like in a weird room that's all woogly and you're like, what's happening in here? Or they themselves are woogly.
Yeah.
Or you see them like squeezing around corners and like getting CGI'd or whatever.
Right,
This is the first, it's like regular daylight. Just the camera on them while they're, it's like a very talky episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And like their makeup was not meant to be looked at this much.
Exactly.
On camera, it looks like you can like see the folds of like, it just looks so much like a rubber mask covered
exactly.
in bumps.
Exactly. It's bumpy. It's brighter yellow than you realized. Oh, it's so
awful.
It's,
yeah. You can like
just
smell
kind of lemon heads.
It kind of look very lemon. It's, yeah. Very lemon-heady sort of environment.
And we get, you know, some other news about what it's like in detainment camps because Danik has once again got a rejection for his wife to be transferred into this detention center as opposed to a different one. Yeah, it's bad. We also then are interrupted here by, I thought it was a point, I didn't see anything specifically calling this out, but it's four red lights start blinking above them.
Okay.
It did make me start thinking about the prison episode as like a Star Trek, like, typical thing, and how much this one does not really stack up to some of the, like, all, like, you know, the four red lights. There's some legendary
famous one. Yeah,
there's even the one DS9, the O'Brien one,
where where O'Brien goes to prison for like 1,000 years.
Yeah, and then like has PTSD after. Like, the prison episodes are usually like they do pretty good big things, and this one is just like, hey, detaining people for their how they look is bad, and that's kind of all we get.
And then like what looks like video from like the first Doom video game of like what the detention center looks like.
Yeah, it's not great.
Video game cutscene ass looking stuff, and they keep showing it.
It's
normally the show seems very aware that the CGI is not very good.
Yeah,
but this one they're just like, and you want to see the detention camp again, right?
And they
give me one matte painting. For the love of God.
It would have looked so much better. God.
Like, do the thing where you're supposed to... What do? They used to, like, paint shower sliding doors. The glass doors. That's how they did a lot of that stuff.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Because you can backlight it.
Right.
Anyways, give me some of that. I'm not fancy. It's probably cheaper.
And it probably used up a lot of the budget. It's frustrating. So General Gratt is, once again... interrogating Archer, kind of. I mean, this, I guess, is the first time he's interrogated. He's called him back in, and he's like, hey, I noticed you're, like, interacting with Sulaban, and also, we pulled up your history, and you did some things in the series premiere that makes me suspicious.
Yeah, I gotta take some issue here with the fact where he's like, have you ever been to Broken Bow, Oklahoma? And I'm just kind of like, no way do they know about states.
Yeah.
States, A, don't really exist anymore. There's like a world government, but I guess there's states. I don't know if there's like fucking federalism for Earth. It's right. never explained. But there's no way this guy who had heard of humans yesterday, which, by the way, I guess all the translator worked perfectly.
No worries.
These guys met, he heard of humans yesterday, and he's like, hey, have you ever been to Oklahoma? Motherfucker, what?
Yeah.
Come on. Just give me a little more flavor. Like, have you been to a town called Brokenbo, wherever that is? Like,
right,
just give,
right.
me something where it's like, it would be alien to him.
Yeah. That's a really good point. They could have totally made his like ham-fisted attempt to like pull a gotcha on him into something more interesting where he doesn't fully understand what he's found here because he doesn't know what humans really are. Yeah. The humans are completely new on the galactic scene. I don't know, neighborhood. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just one of many instances where the show's like, well, we could do something interesting that would be easy to do, or we could do something boring and stupid and just not think about it very hard.
Rely on Dean Stockwell's gravitas.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to startle Lawrence, Kansas, who would be mad at the aliens for not hearing of Oklahoma.
He did, at least, I think, even in a more potentially like relevant way, he brought up Silic infiltrated your ship. And he's like, did he talk about the temporal Cold War? And it's like, you know, okay, I'm glad we're like getting these sort of like confusing references to that. Because it's like, what does this guy know about that? I guess they are at war with the Cabal, but are they in a temporal Cold War? There is something I'm more interested about that than like the Broken Bow thing. Because that whole plot was kind of just a weird reason to bring in the... Klingons in a very boring way. So this may be a bit more interested in where this episode might go. Ultimately, nothing important. Like, I was really, because I didn't remember where this went, I was hoping for a bit more of the temporal Cold War stuff, but no.
No, it's just a full-on, you know, we're not that different, you and I.
Yeah. He starts implying that, hey, maybe that transport that's 3 days out, you'll miss it and you won't get onto the one for 60 days. And then after the commercial break, he's on the phone with T'Pol and he finds out that, hey, there's a delay. Archer might not get out, but it's just a few days, you know, we'll get him out. Don't worry. So I appreciate the fact that now we're seeing General Grat. He's just lying to both of them. It's clear he's not even trying to keep his story straight because he doesn't care anymore.
He does not care. He just wants his people in prison forever.
And they use the fact that he's talking with them to track where this prison is. And the Enterprise decides to head that way just to see if everything's okay.
Hey, this guy says our captain's in jail. Maybe we should go there finally.
Archer, he doesn't like Grat's doing to the Suliban. That's why he's just clamming up, not talking about anything, even though it's going to get him stuck here for longer. He starts talking with Davik about, hey, let's do a prison break. And he's like, oh, the last time we tried that, it didn't go well. And Grat, like, lied about it and then just used it to punish us more. So I'd rather not. Travis has another scene. Yay. He tries to be friends with Sajin, the lemon head.
We did it. Yeah.
And Sajin's grumpy about stereotypes. So did you know that's what this episode's about?
No. Thank you for saying it one more time. I feel like so much of this episode is like them being like, well, we got the concept and now let's just spin our wheels for half an hour about it. Like just going kind of like going in circles, like nothing really happens.
And it's like, I don't think the actor doing Travis's scenes here is doing anything wrong, but I do feel like there might have been a little bit of a like, well, this episode's about stereotypes, so maybe we should have the black guy on it.
Yeah, like Archer knows all about the Japanese internment camps.
Right, right.
The American internment camps of Japanese citizens. And Travis at no point is like, hey, also racism existed on Earth. Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Give me some of that. Maybe. I don't know. It's just weird to be like, we're not going to talk about it at all.
No, but we're just going to have some more scenes about how stereotypes are bad. Mm-hmm. Archer.
And you know what? They are.
It's, you know, we're not wrong. Archer gets a transponder beamed from the Enterprise. Hey, an episode where the teleporter isn't blocked. How convenient. And Archer tells them, hey, I don't want to leave. Did you know about the Japanese internment camps? Starts talking about Manzanar. You know, it's true. It's one of the 10 camps that held about 120,000 people during World War II. It was a lot of citizens, about 2/3, but a lot of people just dragged up into those internment camps. I guess he calls them internment camps, but this whole episode's called Detained. And there's like a weird thing about like, I don't know, this is relevant in today's unfortunate news cycle about what are detainment camps, what are internment, what are concentration camps? It's live history.
Yeah, it sort of suffers like a smattering of, it doesn't know exactly where to point. It's a little.
But hey, we'll talk about this one thing that happened in history about half a decade ago.
Yeah.
So they start planning the escape, but Sajin is worried. He does not trust humans because they look a lot like what are these guys again? Tandarans.
The Tandarians.
I checked. They never come back. This is their one time we have the Tandarans one and done. History. Yep, another one and done for Enterprise.
I think it's cool. There's like this society that like has space travel and it's doing like genocidal shit.
Yeah,
it's just sort of like, and we never thought about it again.
Nope. I mean, maybe lose the temporal Cold War, so.
Yeah, maybe. It seems to be it's being fought on many fronts.
Apparently. Many fronts, yeah.
Which is also another interesting implication that they don't examine the rest of the show, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's not just the humans that the Suliban are fucking with.
Right, and I'm a little curious about what it means to be attacked by a time-traveling cabal. Anyway, Archer gets called into another interrogation because Grat noticed the teleportation beam. I guess it implies they don't really know what those are, so their tech level is spaceships, warp, but not teleport. Anyway, and then they haul Travis into the room because he's like, ah, we found this in his pocket. And they beat up Travis, and it's, you know, things are getting bad. They put Archer in isolation. Grat calls up the Enterprise on their communicator and threatens them, you know, we'll blow you out of the sky if you come near here, and things are escalating.
Normal kind of threats.
Oh, but we have a Travis and Sajin heart-to-heart.
Oh.
Where he points out that, oh, you're judging us humans just because we kind of look like Tandarans?
Now who's the racist?
Mm.
Sounds like you're doing reverse racism to me right now.
Reverse racism. Shame. Okay, we get like 3 seconds of Phlox, because on the Enterprise, they're hatching a plan. There are times I don't like when they don't fill us in on the plan. Here, I didn't mind it. I kind of liked it.
No, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Because they leave you so in the dark.
Yeah.
And you actually don't see any of the plan happening, which I think is actually fun. And like when I was like genuinely surprised when the stuff happened.
Exactly. Yeah. And the Phlox scene we get is like him doing a little laser thing to the camera. I kind of love when they do this, like first person. And he's like, oh, I don't like how the nose looks, but we're good. Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff. Just, you know, the hint that there is a plan, there is a disguise involved. And we get, I think, another fun scene where T'Pol calls up Grat and is like, we got off on the wrong foot. We just want to talk with you about how much we, you know, want to discuss how enlightened we are. And it'd be great if you joined us on our ship for a dinner. And just to show how incredibly smart and enlightened we are, here's a bunch of documents and the Founding Fathers documents and also like the entire Vulcan database. Yeah. As an excuse to like kind of jam their signals. And at first I was like, I don't know why they're doing this. It's kind of fun.
It was some fun T'Pol stuff here.
Yeah, and acting opposed to Dean in a more interesting way than she had been earlier in this episode. It's good.
Yeah.
And I was legit like, okay, why are they doing this? And they kind of implied why, which is that they can detect the teleporter stream, but they don't know what it is. So they were using this to kind of hide the teleporter stream so that when a door knocks on it's Travis, I think, his door. Is it Archer? I don't even remember.
It's Travis because they have to go find Archer.
Right. They do. Okay. And it's just, you know, what you assume is a Suliban. I was kind of like, wait, do we know this Suliban? And then it's like, oh no, it's actually Malcolm in disguise.
Beautiful. In the makeup.
In the makeup, which, you know, props to him for going through with the whole makeup. Seems like it sucks. So then we get a lot of, you know, quick kind of tense action scenes. The ground team is moving forward and planning for the next stage. The ships do attack Enterprise because they've gone to this prison planet. I noted that they have a scene of the Enterprise entering the atmosphere, which feels like more CGI budget they're using on this episode. So great.
Yeah, they show like the shuttlecraft getting like dispatched into the atmosphere.
Yeah. With Travis.
And it looks not good.
It's not great, but it feels like, I think this is new CGI for them. So, wow, they spent money on this.
Yeah. Well, they're really trying to beat Ed.
Yeah. Okay, so everybody in the prison complex has been called out for another one of their inspections, like when they did the four red lights last time. There's like an alarm going. And so they're all out there. And while they're standing there at attention, Travis starts, I guess, his stage of the plan, which is to just sort of distract and complain about food. Yeah. I didn't fully understand what this
I think it was just a distraction. I don't
know. Like, were they setting up the explosives while this was happening?
They must have been. I don't know.
But, you know, that's what happened, is they set up some explosions on a wall. The, like, goofy prison guards notice it and walk up to it and then close them up. Okay, there's some, you know, Trip, pew, pew, pew. He shoots his laser at the bad CGI video game base. There's some laser fights in the commissary. It's not great. Malcolm arrives to save Archer in his isolated prison box, whatever. But oh no, it's Grat. So we get some good crazy. I don't know. I guess mask off Dean Stockwell for his like. He is just racist towards Suliban. I missed this earlier on. He did say this sort of, you know, chilling line about like, we are bringing them into these camps to protect them because, you know, people are being so racist to them once the Suliban started attacking. If we just left them on the streets, they'd be attacked. And if we let them go far away, then they'll get kidnapped by the Suliban or the cabal and forced to fight. So this is really the best thing for them. It's in their best interest. Yeah. All that's out the window here. Now he's just like, they'll become terrorists the second they leave. You've condemned them to death.
Yeah, he also like basically admits that he's made them so miserable the second they leave, they'll become
right. Cabal. Yes. He knows exactly what they're doing. He also admits like he knows that they aren't actually the terrorists in the cabal, but like now if we let them go, they'll hate us. So they will be okay. But they like turn the tables on him and grab the gun and leave him be. I don't know. They don't kill him for some reason. And this is also, okay, the kid, like, yells about my dad, he's in there, he's, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was when I really realized, because the kid had a line that I was like, oh shit, that kid is in full makeup. Damn.
That's a, yeah, that is a full kid in there.
That's basically it. They all get away. And then they have this.
All the shuttles leave.
The shuttle, they're like, will they make it? Well, they're definitely going to get away, but will they be all right?
No answer.
Don't know.
They kind of hit you with the, what I always call getting dick wolfed at the end of an SVU episode where there's like kind of no resolution.
Yeah.
And then it just like fades out. And just per executive producer Dick Wolf, which is what they hit you with.
Yeah.
But it's you know, Brandon Braga you.
Something to think about. Much to think about.
much to consider with this one. Stereotyping bad? Is detaining people in a detention camp bad?
I mean, yeah. Good one. You got that one right.
First time.
Star Trek.
Yeah. I mean, to the like sort of microscopic the puny post 11 American mind. maybe this could have hit pretty hard. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't because the ratings weren't great.
But I mean, no one watched it. But if you were watching it, do you think for a moment in his Ford F-150, Lawrence Kansas looked up from his little tiny television that he was watching this on and looked to the stars and thought to himself, I wonder if the people I'm racist against are looking at the same stars right now and that they too are people? Do you think he thought that? Do you think he took a moment to consider the enormity of the human experience?
Yeah, but I think he imagined them also sitting in a truck watching a TV show on a little TV.
Yeah, waiting for the Sharper Image to open. which is where I think he's parked outside the mall canonically.
Yeah.
But yeah, a whatever episode of this show. On the grand scheme of the first season of the show, not awful.
It's weird because it's like, this is another unique kind of thing that Enterprise accomplishes where it's a step above the interminably boring episodes and the aimless episodes and the ones where the actors, the light from the actors' eyes has died because September 11th has happened. But like, is it good? No. Note this, that the writer, who was two writers, but Mike Sussman was one of the writers, and he's a very frequent Star Trek writer, and he said that he doesn't like message shows and didn't like this one. And
okay, you wrote it.
I mean, yeah, and in my mind, it's like, why are you writing Star Trek? I mean, I get that you shouldn't do message, quote-unquote message shows this ham-fisted, but like, I'm sorry, Star Trek has messages a lot. It is
the message. I mean, you watch the original series and it's all like Twilight Zone episodes, basically. Yeah, yeah. And like every single one of them. Yeah.
And sometimes those messages are like, what if aliens practiced free love? And it's like, okay.
Yeah. Sometimes the episodes are, what if aliens were hunting a ghost?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's sick. I'm not ragging on that, but it's like they hide that it's a message show so much better, much more often in basically every other Star Trek series but this one. So it's like, man, maybe it's not message shows, quote unquote, that are the problem here. Mike.
Yeah. Sometimes the message is, if you have PTSD from a war, what you need is to go live with Frank Sinatra for a month.
which is
a full thing that happens on Deep Space Nine. just a thing I think about all the time.
Yeah.
Well,
we have 5 more episodes of this danged season.
Oh my God. It's like, is it possible?
I'm waiting to get to the season because then I know it's possible that we could get another episode with our favorite Andorian pal.
Ah, Shran.
But
save me, Shran. Shran, save me. Save me, Shran.
But a big thank you to our Patreon donors. We have a popular episode of The West Wing that we watched.
Oh, yeah.
You can listen to that one. If you subscribe for $1 or $2 over at the Patreon, we'll have something else again in the future, because that's what we do for our valued Patreon subscribers. Thank you.
That's right. So very soon.
Very soon.
Very soon I will be, my book is coming out. My new book, Simplicity, will be out. And you can come see me on book tour. MattyLipchansky.com/tour. And then you can also pre-order the book and then read it in your home. And won't that be nice for everybody involved?
It will be.
I promise. The metaphors are slightly better.
Is this a message book? This is one of the books.
It's a book with I had thoughts while writing it and drawing it. Is it a message book? A message book? On every page I've written a message to you, the reader. addressed to you by name. And if you unlock the code, it actually gives you my address and come to my house. Well, for Temporal Culture War, I have been, in so many ways, Matty Lubchansky.
I am not to Paul. I am Clayton Ashley. Till next time.
Let's go.
Let's go.